Hey, it's Krista. Thanks for being here, showing up for yourself, and being curious today. On the Rewilding Humanity podcast, we explore the depths of what it means to be human and how to come back into wholeness, physically, mentally, spiritually. Virtual high five to all you truth seekers out there. Let's get into it. Hey, everyone. Welcome back to the Rewilding Humanity podcast. I have a really fun, interesting episode to share with you guys today. We are chatting with Mark Elmy, and we're chatting about Mayan astrology. This is so cool. I did a reading with Mark about a month or so ago. A girlfriend of mine was staying with me, and she was like, oh my God, you have to get a reading with him. It's really fascinating. I did, and honestly, it was life-changing. And it has provided me with some insight into, I guess, just a lot of the things that have happened in my life recently. It was a really great time for me to have this reading with him because I'm at a pinnacle in my life in terms of where I am in my age, where there is a lot of change happening in the energy of my chart. And because clearly there is a ton of stuff going on in my life right now with things changing, it's helping me process that, which is really cool. Mark is really fascinating. He has been studying the calendar and culture of the Maya since 1998. He lives for part of the year in Guatemala, and he's worked with elders and teachers in many parts of Guatemala and was actually initiated as a spiritual guide in the K'ichi tradition. I hope I said that correctly. He's trained in sacred fire ceremony, reading seeds, and working with the cycles of the Chuelk. Oh, I'm not pronouncing that correctly. I'm butchering it. These words are really beautiful and fascinating, but I cannot pronounce them. But basically, he works with the cycles of the Maya sacred calendar. There are definitely some similarities that I found in readings that I've had with Vedic calendar readings, but there's definitely a whole other flavor with Mayan astrology. And I love the way that Mark explains it. He calls it like weather. And we get into a lot on this episode. I thought we would start off talking about just chart readings, but things took a turn and we talked a lot about what's potentially going to come in the next few years. In the spiritual world, there is a lot of talk about really big shifts happening over the next few years between now and 2027. And so we discussed that a little bit and maybe what to watch out for or be prepared for. We talk about the secrets of the ancients, life path guidance. Yeah, there's a lot here. It's really fascinating. Mark is just, he has such a wonderful breadth of knowledge. And it's really cool. We didn't get into this in the podcast, but what he's explaining and his lens on everything is really his own work. So yes, he is working with a lot of traditional wisdom, but he has done a lot of work on his own in order to create a lot of the mathematical formulations that he's able to then predict or give information about people's charts and stuff like that. So it's really fascinating, really fascinating. I think that's it. I'm going to leave it at that. There's a lot of ground to cover. This is a longer episode, but yeah, really great insights here. So let's jump in and get into this podcast with Mark Elmy.
Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. How are you today?
I'm good. I'm so excited to be chatting with you again.
Nice to see you again too.
Oh, you have a very different background this time. It looks like
yes,
all kinds of stuff going on. Looks science-y or something. What's happening there?
Yeah. I'm at home in Guatemala now.
Okay.
And so I have, yeah, my astronomy stuff, my soap making stuff. I hope it's not too distracting or whatever. It's like my apothecary and it's my laboratory.
I love it. Yeah, no, I'm all about the apothecary vibe. So jars of things and rows and bottles and potions and all of that is my vibe for sure. I'm so excited to have you on the podcast today to chat about Mayan astrology. I loved the session that we had a few weeks ago. And it's funny because the energy that I'm moving into, or I've already started to move into, I'm like really feeling now. And I feel like it's been helpful because I'm like, oh, okay, I can see why. And it gives you it just lets you fall into it a little bit more with acceptance. For me, we had chatted about, oh, you're going to have this major energy that makes you want to travel and move a lot for the next 13 years. And yeah, I'm feeling that pretty significantly now. Like, things have happened in my life recently that have taken things away to allow me to do that and move and be free. And it feels really good. So yeah, I think there's just a lot of power in having this type of knowledge. And I haven't received these types of insights with more popular astrology readings. So I wanted to introduce this to the community and would love for you explain. Let's talk about Mayan astrology.
Awesome. Yeah, I see it rather like a weather forecast. And it's showing us where we're going. Okay, it's an astrological forecast is a shortcut way of saying it, partly because we almost don't necessarily have the words to express exactly what it is. So astrology is what we work with. It is very linked with planetary cycles. The ancient Maya in particular were very interested in these things. In fact, most of the surviving documentation that we have after the Spanish purges is actually astronomical tables. And you'll find that many of their temple sites, many of their pyramid sites, they're all aligned with stars and planets and rising points of Venus and all of these kind of things. And it is all denoted using what is known as the sacred calendar, which is a calendar of 260 days, which is the calendar that we were looking at within your reading. And so there has got to be some kind of tie-in between planetary motion and the movements of our cosmos to that calendar. So astrology fits in there. Now, one of the reasons why I mention weather forecasts is because, of course, the weather forecast is telling us what it's going to be doing tomorrow. And what the weather is going to be doing is going to directly affect our choices and our decisions on what might be our best course of action for that day. Now, we have, of course, free will. It might be that today is going to be rainy, but I might say, you know what? The weather person is usually wrong, so I'm going to have a picnic anyway. Or I might say, I only have today, so I'm going to take an umbrella just in case. Or I might say, you know what? The weekend's looking much better. Let's postpone through to the weekend. What having the information does for us is to give us the choice of how to direct ourselves and how to direct our energy in that time. And I feel that this is something that the calendar does for us when we understand what we could call our energetic signature. It helps us to truly understand how to put our best foot forwards, how to work with the energy that we've got. As you were saying, with regards to the idea of travel and that kind of thing, it's okay, if you're trying to make a solid base and yet your energy is saying it's time to travel, you might find yourself getting more and more frustrated in that, putting all that energy into trying to make a solid base, when actually your energy is saying it's time to go out. And vice versa, we might find people that are like they've been traveling for a long time. I was talking with somebody yesterday about this, where she'd been traveling almost all her life, and yet she was going into an energy which was very much about settling down, finding community, finding home, creating a family, as it were. And she's saying, I've been getting these feelings that it's time to settle down. And that's this coming in, and it's coming in about 18 months' time. So we can really see those patterns coming out. And in some ways, because it's based on the date of birth, it can almost be a bit scary in a while, in a way, because you're looking at it and going, really? So all of this was mapped out from my birth date? Where does that take us with the idea of time, with regards to, are we just experiencing something which has already happened? Are we in this spherical time? Or that goes into some very deep philosophical questions. But it's very interesting the way that these things can play out.
What is your perspective on that, actually? I know there's lots of different ideas around it, and some schools of thought that I've always resonated with were you have a soul and you basically decide to incarnate wherever that is in this lifetime. As I'm experiencing right now, I'm having an incarnation on Earth. I might even have other incarnations, other places, and that's like a whole other rabbit hole to go down. But it's almost like we do have these maps. We've predetermined the lessons and the experiences that we've wanted to come in and experience in this lifetime. And then we just keep doing it over and over again. What are your thoughts on that?
A few years ago, a friend of mine was sharing with me an experience that she had between some academics and some elders. And the question was asked of the academics, if you had to describe time, what shape would you draw? And the academics basically drew a straight arrow that went from past to future, one direction. The elders drew a spiral, which was a very interesting thing. And this is something that we, I feel, see within the calendar systems, because it's like we get these repeating cycles of time. But I often feel that this has to do with the movement of not just the Earth, but our solar system through space. Because if we looked at it from our point of view, or from a view above our sun, this was something which shown by Nassim Haramein back in about 2008, I think it was. He's saying, like, we might think about our anthropocentric point of view of living on planet Earth, or we might think of our Earth-centric point of view. Then we might think of our solar system-centric, I said soul-centric point of view, where maybe we could call that, where if we were to put a camera above the sun, what we would show, what we would see, is basically something that rather looks like the Earth moving round the sun in a nearly perfect circle. But what we have to remember is that our universe is also expanding as well. Our sun is moving through our galaxy at a particular speed. And so this is actually creating a spiral. Now, we might say that if we were to look at the 12th of September on any given year, we might have a fair idea. Mid-September here in Guatemala is usually pretty rainy. We can know, okay, we're going to get sun in the morning. We might get rain in the afternoon. It's going to get to 26 Celsius or something like that here in the highlands. We've got an idea about how it will be, because it is a repeating cyclic pattern. But that cyclic pattern has also been transposed by a certain distance. And so you get a little variation. And you will find variation in 13-year patterns, 26-year patterns, 52-year patterns, 104-year patterns, and so on. And so we can see this idea of cyclic time appearing. But when it comes to writing up what I particularly see with regards to people's energetic signatures or life path guidance within the sacred calendar, we're looking at the mathematics of it and wondering why it seems that people are able to find exactly when they're going to go through a change. It's almost like it's already been written at their point of birth. sometimes it's a little bit difficult to process that, to be quite honest. Oh, it's already happened. But another thing that we can understand with that is that if it has already happened, the choices and decisions have also already been made. And in some ways, we can maybe put less emphasis on worrying about our choices or worrying about our decisions, because if we've already made them, then it doesn't really matter which choice that we choose to make, because we've already made it anyway. So then it starts to get very profound, and it is very, I find it starts to get a little bit difficult to think in those terms, because we're really looking at multi-layered, multi-dimensional kind of mathematics and programming, as it were. But it gets very interesting. And for me, one of the things that I have felt for a long time is that however it was done, it seems to me that these people tapped into something mathematical, which seems to be connected with the structure of our being, with the structure of our reality. Once again, we're getting very deep very quickly on this, but it's almost as if you have things like, you have things like pi, you have things like the golden ratio, you have things like the speed of light or the Planck constant, these universal constants that are like part of the geometry, the physics, the mathematics that make up our reality. And it seems to me that these peoples tapped into something that helps to understand how that reality was created. This is why they call it a calendar of humanity or a calendar of life. And when we start understanding the mathematics behind reality, then it allows us to see where the pattern is true and where the pattern is false, because it starts to go into what I would call like logical mathematics. Now, obviously, we're all familiar with the phrases about statistics can be used to prove anything that you want, because you just manipulate the statistics to do what you want it to do. But when it comes to pure mathematics, things either add up or they don't add up. There is no in between. And this is more what I'm talking about with regards to the calendars and the way that they fit all together. And I use the word calendars. Obviously, what I use when I'm making life path readings, this is called the sacred calendar. And we also look at the solar calendar. But when the Spanish arrived, the Maya had 26 different calendars running. And there's probably more than that may have come in and gone out of use.
Wow.
So their study of time, of astronomy, of cycles, and I would say like almost as of the reality that we live in, I think was unparalleled by most ancient civilizations.
Is this calendar system older than the Vedic system, or would it be happening around the same time? Because I know the Vedic system is also quite old, but...
I am personally not particularly sure of the age of the Vedic system. I think that it is probably older. It is interesting to see that there are other systems around the world that ancient peoples came up with. Some of the first recorded writings with the calendar systems, they were in the what is known as the pre-classic period, somewhere between 500 and 200 BC. So they're pretty old. And of course, we also have to remember that as time goes on, more and more is being dug up and discovered about the Maya. Their civilization was largely, or their great civilization of cities and structures within the jungles was largely abandoned in the late 9th and early 10th century. They then went on to found places such as Chichen Itza or Mayapan, which are post-classic cities. And really, their grand era would be spanning from somewhere around about 1500 BC through to 1000 AD. So 2,500 years of that kind of culture going on. Now, when we look at the calendar systems, and again, as I say, more and more is being dug up. And the wonderful thing about what in Mayan archaeology, from what I can see, they have to keep moving the timelines. And it is flexible enough because it is adaptable enough where the archaeologists and the academics are looking at things going, well, we've found this and we didn't think that we were going to find this before, let's say 100 AD. But now look, we've found this and carbon dating what's around it. This is 200 BC. So we've got to change the timeline. In 2017, they flew a little plane over the north of Petén with a LIDAR scanner. And they built this LIDAR map and they found thousands of structures that they never knew was there. They found 170 kilometers of road system. These roads were called Sacbé. They were up to 35 meters wide, up to 9 meters raised from the jungle floor. They had about a 20 centimeter cap of stucco on the top, and they were white. They were called Sacbé. Now, there are two reasons for that. Firstly, it is the movement between cities during the rainy season. They needed something to lift them up from the muddy jungle floor, the swamp floor, so that they could easily move people and trade between their great cities. And they were white so that they could move at night. It would reflect the moonlight and they were able to see easily what was going on in the dark. And these roads, I've walked on them, or what's left of them, even now, and you can see where they drop away at the sides. Sometimes you can see a few curbstones here and there. Obviously, they've been mostly reclaimed by the jungle. And if we think of them as being getting on for 2000 or 1800 years old, we're talking about the same, I was going to say the same style as the Romans. We see a lot of Roman roads in Europe. We still travel on what was basically a Roman road a couple of thousand years ago, or just under a couple of thousand years ago, and you'll see the same, but in a much harsher environment here in, particularly in northern Guatemala. So they found all these structures, they found all these roads, and they had to up their estimate of the civilization population at the time. And as far as I'm aware, it jumped from about 1.7 million up to about 17 million because they found 10 times the number of structures they were expecting. So you start thinking about a little area like that, where it's not little, but it's a relatively small area, 17 million population. I mean, that's getting on for like the size of Europe. And it's hardly a surprise if you said that the top percentile of thinkers were going to be the ones that were the mathematicians, that the ones that came up with the calendars. Well, taking from a pool of 17 million is a bit different from taking from a pool of 1.7.
Yeah.
Now, going back to your original question, I was just at the weekend looking at something called the Nebra Sky Disk, which was a disk unearthed in what was former East Germany in 1999. And it has some very interesting connections with regards to possibly being a Mars calendar, possibly being a Venus calendar, showing like solstice and equinox alignments on it and that kind of thing, which is, it's like a graphical version of what many of the Mayan calendar systems did mathematically. And so we see this now. That sky disk is, it's been dated as around about 3,600 years old. And it seems to me, again and again, we have these ancient cultures coming up with extremely sophisticated mathematical calendrical systems that are tied into the cycles of planets and stars. Now, that may just be because we know that the cycles of the planets, the periodicity of them, we could actually look at the planets as being rather like big hands on a clock. that show us when Venus is there, when Mars is there, and when like the moon is there. That happens every 107 years or something like that, or every 104 years. And so we're using them for timing. But it seems that there are many ancient civilizations that were, I would say, borderline obsessed with the marking of time and the understanding of the flow of time and lineage in particular.
Oh my gosh, that is so fascinating. And what an exciting time that we're in right now that a lot of this stuff is being rediscovered. What do the calendars say about the time that we are currently in right now and what we're shifting into? Because there's a lot more interest in finding and rediscovering the truth and a lot more, I would say, there's a big awakening happening right now too, right? To who we truly are. So what are you seeing in the calendars and the stars?
Okay, so I think that we always have to be very careful with regards to prophecy. Mm-hmm. And in particular, more of the, let's say, what you might call prophetic Mayan stuff is something which has come later on post-conquest and sometimes also like in the New Age rather than anything else. The 2012 thing was a very fine example of that. In 2010 or so, I was asking my teacher about it, and he said, it's not really our thing. It's something which seems to be coming in from the USA or something like that. And they eventually did do something, and they decided, okay, we're going to really celebrate this. And we also have to understand that many of these things have been reconstructed in particular ways, some with the help of the elders and some without the help of the elders. And this is a living, breathing tradition here that's being looked after and celebrated by many thousands of people here, particularly in the highlands of Guatemala. So with those things in mind, if we go to the 2012 thing, what we find is that various academics throughout the years have put hours and hours into painstaking mathematics, and usually before computer systems were available, which is unbelievable to me. It's amazing what they did to come up with these correlations to find these patterns and cycles of time. Now, according to the Maya book of creation stories called the Popol Vuh, we are in, I'm going to say are for now, the fourth age of the sun. The creators had four goes at creating. Firstly, they created the animals, but the animals just chattered and squawked and couldn't keep the days and couldn't remember their ceremonies. And so they said, okay, you guys go and live in the forests and you go and live in the cliffs and the banks and the trees and the bushes. Then they decided, okay, how are we going to make people? And they said, okay, clay. We can make people out of clay. So they tried making people out of clay and they animated them. But you can imagine how clay people might move very slowly, and they weren't very good either. And so they sent a great flood to wash them away. They said, okay, how are we going to do it next? Wood. Let's use wood. And so they created the wooden people. Now, once again, we might sometimes say that a film, the acting might be wooden in it.
Mm.
We're not really very impressed by wooden acting, and neither were the creators. And again, the wooden, the mannequins, they didn't have the mind to speak, to make the prayers, to make the ceremonies, to remember their creators. And so they were destroyed by a great storm. And this, like they said that even their pots and pans turned them, their dogs, their turkeys, all turned on them. Mm. And eventually they said, how are we going to make people? They did a divination and came up with corn. And so they created people from corn. And this is why they've said that the fourth age of the sun is the age of corn. Now, if we look back, it's interesting that if we look with regards to the dating of this. There is a stela, that's a big stone monument with carvings on it, that gives a date for the beginning of this era of time, of the fourth sun. And that, if you work it out using the ways that things are done, tends to be either the 11th, 12th, or 13th of August of 3114 BC. If you follow the same pattern back, you find out that the mud people got washed away and the wooden people came in around about the 1st of April of 8134 BC, I think I worked it out as something like that, which is interesting because that is said to be by some sources the time when the Great Flood happened, when we get the end of the Ice Age. And oh, look, okay, the mud people being washed away by a great flood, and around about that time can be correlated with when the sea levels rose. Now, what happened then? There was a lot of displaced people. What did they become? They became wanderers. They maybe had to go back to hunter-gathering, which would put them in the forest, which would make them the wooden people or the people of the trees. And what happened about 5,000 years ago was that they settled down and started creating agricultural settlements where they were growing corn. So we can see that. And so when we say sun or people, I sometimes wonder whether we could substitute the word civilization in there. Like, the, for example, the civilization that were in the forest and then the civilization that grew corn, the time of corn. Now, if you follow that through, you come to this 2012 point, which was the change of the Baktun being a roughly 400-year cycle, the 13 Baktuns being this 5,126-year cycle. And this is said to be the era of a new sun, of a new civilization. Now, that was 21st December 2012. Many of us remember that very well, with a number of people that were releasing books about it and doing tours about it and getting very excited about the lead up to 2012. And then it didn't seem like anything happened, right? Now, my opinion with it, my understanding of it, and the way that I have been looking at it is that nothing moves in absolutes. It's us that flicks a light switch and the light immediately comes on. As the sun rises, we move through twilight, we move through the morning, we move through midday, we move through the afternoon, then we get sunset, then we get twilight, then we get dark again. There are different phases of light and they come in and out. And I feel that time and our civilization moves in similar ways. Mm-hmm. It's very unusual when we get a snap kind of collapse. It happens over time, or a snap building as well, a snap enlightenment. It's happening over time. Now, what we find, particularly if looking at things like the solar calendar, is that, and the Venus calendar in particular, is that it will move in cycles of 13, 26, 52, and 104 years. And so what we might find is that, for example, from 1999 through to 2012 was one period of 13 years. From 2012 through to 2025 is another period of 13 years. Now, within the solar calendar has a large cycle of 52 years. This is made up from four 13-year periods. And each of those four 13-year periods begins and ends with the same Nawal, that is the same energy within the sacred calendar. In 2013, we began a period that begins on one Iq and will end on 13 Iq. In 2026, we begin a period that will begin one Kech and will end on 13 Kech. And 2039, I think it is, if I've done the maths, we will begin a cycle that begins on one Ech and ends on 13 Ech. Now, they have other ones in between, but we could think of these as specific cycles. And this is very much like my own observations, my own understandings, my own thinking about this. I just want to show, make sure people understand where I'm getting it from. Now, one of the things I think is interesting, going back to this understanding of cyclic time, is the understanding that we could look back 52 years to the last time that particular, it's called a mam or a year lord or a carrier of the year, when it was in power last. For example, this year, 11R, the last time that was in charge was in 1971. So we could say, okay, what happened in 1971? Because we may get a flavor of what happened in 1971 as we go through 2023. I think that 2021 was interesting because that was 9 Ik, and that would have related to 1969, and 2020 would have related to 1968. And whilst, of course, we all know kind of what happened with certain viruses and all that kind of thing in 2020, we can also see like the civil unrest that happened in the US, which mirrors what was happening in 1968 as well.
Yeah.
Now, it's taken on a new dimension. It's moved forwards, if that can be something that I kind of like dare say about it. But for example, our communications technology now means that things that may have been, let's say, hidden from general view in 1968, because you've got to have a certain number of photographers there, reporters or whatever, and then they've got to report it. Now, everybody's carrying a camera in their pocket, and before, like within seconds, it's been uploaded. People across the nation, across the world, know about it. And so maybe we're coming back to a similar theme, but we're taking it further along the timeline. So maybe, hopefully, something gets done about it quicker or something along that kind of line. And when you see this is what happened in that era, in that year, and that year is now coming up again, we can say once again, okay, what do we have an understanding that might happen, and how are we going to deal with it better if it comes up in this time? On the broader scale of things, and going back to your question, I also look at that 13-year cycle, and I have some concerns about it, I have to say, because for me, the years 1974 to 1986, I was very, very awake and alive and a teenager during some of those years, and some of them were very much like the Cold War years. And this would effectively be like an analog to 2038 rather. And so there may be those issues coming up, but we also look at 1974 going into 1986. I remember getting my first home computer in about 1984 or 85, I think it was, even though it was a 3.5K of RAM and that kind of thing, very different to what we are now. But we also had that civilization jumped where we started moving into the digital age, being more accessible to people. So, you know, whilst I say there are certain causes for concern, there are also other advancements that happened then. And we're looking at the clock coming back full cycle and saying, okay, where has that now evolved to?
Yeah, we talked about this last time where I was like inquiring about similarities that you might be seeing with what other mystics talk about, say, for example, in human design or the gene keys. So with this prophecy of 2027 and like this huge shift happening, I'm also hearing a lot through different mystics and oracles that like something really big is about to happen. When you talk about the Cold War and nuclear and that sort of thing, bring some potential ideas up, which can seem a little bit frightening. But yeah, we also talked about, there was a woman that I had listened to recently on a podcast, and through the mystical community, a lot of people are talking about this shift between, we're moving in we're going from 3D to 5D, right? And there's going to be this huge shift. And so there's different thoughts about it, where some people say it's going to be subtle and some people say it's going to be something more grand. And this woman in particular, I thought it was interesting, because what she said was that, and she thinks it's going to happen in a couple of years from now, so like around 2025. And she said, this is something that is predetermined. It happens at certain times. It's happened before in humanity, whether it's every 1200 years or like a 50,000 years, something to that effect. And she says that our bodies are actually designed to withstand what is going to happen. And there's this transformation, this transfiguration that is going to happen. And it comes through a huge solar flare from the sun. And there is this whole, there's something within us, like I mentioned, our bodies are actually programmed to transform. Normally something like this would just wipe humanity out, but for people who choose to move through it, because you have free will and you can choose to move into this other energy, there's actually a lot of beauty on the other side. And I'll have to get her on the podcast as well, because I thought it was such a fascinating perspective. She basically experienced it like through some sort of like psychic process that she went through. And then she's telling people like, don't be afraid. This is actually going to be cool. We talked about this a little bit, and you mentioned that there was something that you were seeing too that might relate to it in terms of that solar energy.
Yeah, one of the things that I am currently researching, looking into, is correlation between solar activity and different Maya calendars. To 60-day count, 365-day count, 360-day count, and 819 count. And one of the reasons why I started looking into it was because solar activity has been something which I think we overlook a great deal.
Mm.
Now, we may see, let's say we see a Facebook page where somebody is saying, hey, there's been a big solar flare, you might get a headache or something like that. We get that kind of thing going on. But there is a heck of a lot more to it than that. Funnily enough, I just read a very interesting article yesterday. And we can start by looking at something like the Carrington event, which happened in 1859. And the Carrington event was a massive solar flare that hit the Earth. Well, it was 1859. 160 years ago, something like that. Anyway, it caused white aurora to happen somewhere in, I think it was Colorado or somewhere like that. And the workers that were there actually got up because they thought it was daytime. They started cooking breakfast because the sky lit up.
Mm.
And there was things happening like that. In 1921, if I remember rightly, there was another huge event that caused sparking of telegraph wires, that caused sparks to jump from the telephone operator in New Orleans, I think it was, or something like that, to his head or something like that. It caused all of this kind of like thing. And then in 1989, we had a solar event that caused Quebec's grid to shut down, like electrical grid to shut down, because it's overloading the Earth's electromagnetic system. Now, it's something which has been a bit of a pet topic for mine for a little while, and I'm researching it. I'm no expert on it by any stretch of the imagination. I'm looking around to find out what I can find.
Mm-hmm.
And what I also found was papers that regarded the cycles of human fertility with regards to solar activity. And this is a medical paper. This is not a new agey like fringe science thing. This is people literally looking at it and showing correlation between the 10.8 year sunspot cycle, or 21.6 year sunspot cycle. What we also see is that solar activity can be a driver of our climate with regards to things like El Nino, La Nina, ocean temperatures creating hurricanes doing what they do as we speak. There's two, there's one rather big one out in the Atlantic right now. Now, if we take into account that there is, let's say, storms which bring rain, and there is fertility involved, surely in order to keep harmony in society, knowing about those impacts would be extremely important to many ancient cultures.
Mm-hmm.
We see, excuse me, we see that there are records of sunspots from certainly from Chinese astronomers. There are records probably from Indian astronomers as well. These are not necessarily a new thing that's come up. I am yet to discover or talk with the right people about the possibility that there was records of sunspots kept by the ancient Maya. But what we see is that we might see like depictions of solar deities with what are known as death spots on them. And it makes me wonder whether that might be somehow they were able to see it and say, look, the sun's got these spots on it. What's going on? Now, when we look at things like their Venus tables or their lunar tables and that kind of thing, we can see how would you create a table like that? You start off with observation. Now, that observation might have to take, in the case of Venus, 104 years before you realize that you're coming back to the repeating pattern. In the least, it's got to take 8 years, less 2 days anyway. And so we might be talking about multi-generational observation of these patterns in order to work out, so you can then calculate the mathematics from that because you're seeing it back. So if they were also calculating it with regards to sunspot activity, for example, solar flare activity, because you know that if I've what I've watched here at the lake, I live beside Lake Atitlan, in from 2009 through to, as we were building up from solar minimum to solar maximum, we were getting a great deal of rainfall, and being as the lake has no outlet, it actually, the level rose, and the level rose by several meters. Several people lost their homes because they'd built on the shore of the lake, and the lake went up in a way that nobody expected. As the sunspot cycle reduced from 2014 through 2019, 2020, the lake level went back down again, suggesting more sun and less rain. And so we're seeing over that 11-year cycle that as the solar activity grew, so did the level of rainfall. As it fell, the level of rainfall fell as well. Now, imagine that you are somewhere like Tikal, which has no natural water source. Your water is coming from reservoirs. If you need to keep order in a place like that, you need to know how much rain is going to fall this year. Are we going to have a drought? Do we need to plant more corn? How can I understand that? If we consider that the rulers of those cities were seen as divine beings, they would have to provide plenty of water, plenty of food for their population, because if they didn't, their divinity would be questioned, right? How can this person, or how can this our ruler be a divine being when we're hungry and thirsty? And understanding the cycles which drive, for example, the water cycle that drive like the harvest of the corn might have been something which would be very important to them. And going back to this idea of solar activity, we could see in particular every 60 years or so, 1869, 1921, 1989, although that kind of thing, okay, it's a rare or thereabouts, there seems to be a large kind of like eruption, as it were. Now, that would put us around about 2040 or so, I think it is, which doesn't quite fit into like the other timelines. But if that were to happen, without even looking at jumping from 3D to 5D, which can be there as well, the amount of satellites that would be knocked out of action, the amount of electronics and electrical systems that would be knocked out of action. You think about our supermarkets. Now, I'm in the US, as far as I'm aware, like maybe you don't own it. Okay, some areas you got major snowstorms and that kind of thing. But I remember in the year 2000 in the UK, there was a truck driver strike. And because the truck drivers were on strike, they were on strike about the price of diesel. After 3 days, the supermarket shelves were pretty much empty. Now, of course, there was some panic buying going on. But the problem was that also the gas stations were empty. And so the infrastructure started shutting down within 3 to 5 days because supermarkets run on this kind of like computerized system. So it gets taken out the shelf, scanned at the checkout, gets reordered like at the warehouse the next day or within 2 days, the new one arrives or the new lot arrives. So if we imagine that those computerized systems start to break down, we start to see what happens to all of these, in particular the large supermarkets, where many people will buy their groceries and that. They're gone 3 days. One of the things that I love about Guatemala is that between earthquakes, landslides, heavy rains, and other things that happen, many of the little tiendas here have all got dried beans, dried rice, all of this kind of things. There's much more preparedness. There's much more of a robust system kept by the people here because it needs to be.
Mm-hmm.
And in the Western countries, such as US, Canada, Western Europe, and all that kind of thing, we've become very reliant on the tech to streamline performance, increase profits, and all of that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Solar activity has the opportunity to knock that right out. And if we don't have a place to grow our things and we don't have a tienda down the road that is stocking like those dried goods, then major solar activity that could happen at the solar maximum in 2025, 2026 might really shake up our society.
Would it ever? Yeah. It's interesting. There's something that has been gnawing at me since around 2021, where it just felt like, get back to the land, get prepared. I think there has been a lot that has been revealed in the past few years, and a lot of people are starting to wake up to the notion of so many different things. But the biggest thing for me and what I'm realizing is that the farther away that we get from our true nature and our connection with Gaia, the more problems it just creates. And this is through the whole spectrum of our health and wellness, our mental health, communities, all of these things. The further away we get from the land and the community, the harder things are going to get for us. In Canada, the forest fire situation here, for example, is just absolutely insane. This summer was horrendous. It's getting worse and worse every year. And this is for many different reasons, but mostly it's because of our extractive nature and what we've done over the past 100 years to the land. And we're seeing it in real time now. And the more we continue down this path of mass consumerism and extraction, and it's just not sustainable. It's not sustainable. And we know that. And I feel like there is just some kind of reset coming. And we really need the skills, we need those skills that our ancestors had, we need to reclaim that knowledge. I think all of that is really starting to flood in now. And these conversations are just so important to have, because there is going to be a really big shift no matter what. I don't know what that's going to look like, but it's coming. And yeah, just, I think it's time to start thinking about preparing. And that's the aspect of sovereignty and self-sufficiency and all of those things. We have allowed other people to take our power for so long. And yeah, things I feel are going to change in a significant way.
Absolutely. When I first made the choice to come to Guatemala, certainly there was part of it was to follow my passion of Mayan calendars, to go and to be able to sit with the elders and understand better the cycles, understandings of the calendar. But there was a big part of it as well, which was seeing exactly that. Like I say, that truck driver strike in 2000 was a really big wake-up call. And we're all getting them. We're all feeling that. Mm. I feel that here in 2020, I have to say, there's a part of me that doesn't want to talk about 2020 too much. It's almost as if we're done with that. We never want to go back there again and all that kind of thing. But one of the things that happened here in Guatemala was that transportation between, I'm going to call them states, they're called departments, but it's like the different states of Guatemala and that, they were shut. And the president announced these very severe kind of lockdowns, as it were.
Mm-hmm.
And the first thing we thought is, how are we going to get food? How is the food going to come out from the city? How are these shops going to be supplied? Is there going to be enough for everybody? Now, because we're human and we get busy with stuff, and I certainly got busy with stuff, I'd forgotten that when I first came here, it was to live a more sustainable life, to live something which was much more harmonious with the earth, to have a veggie garden, to have chickens for eggs and have all of those kind of things. And then, you know what? Picking caterpillars off broccoli every day got too difficult when I could buy broccoli relatively cheaply on the market. Mm-hmm. And the chickens either got eaten by a tacuacin, that's a possum, or various other things happen. You know what? My friend keeps chickens over there, or this. And slowly, I went back to the old way, or my old ways.
Mm-hmm.
And I forgot my instincts to make myself just a little bit more self-sufficient, a little bit more self-supporting, to spend more time in the garden and less time on the phone. Do we really need to scroll through Facebook for hours, or why don't we go and pick some caterpillars off our broccoli kind of thing? Mm-hmm. The time is there if you choose to make it. And when you realize that this is something which is both a vital skill and a vital source of nourishment as we go forwards, it makes us think. I can't imagine what it would have been like to be in a city, in an apartment with no garden, for example, during lockdowns and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. At least here I was able to get out into my garden and do what needed to be done. Now, I would hope that we would never be going through that kind of event again. It's happened once, and now we're like a little bit on the alert for it. And if something like that can't wake us up to become more sustainable, to become more robust within our living, within our food sources, our water sources, our infrastructure, then I don't know what's going to wake us up.
Yeah. It reminds me of lessons that I've had in my own life in the past, where, for example, being in a relationship that wasn't serving me or the other person at the time, I received many intuitive nudges along the way and many signs that I chose to ignore. And those sounds and those messages, those nudges, they all got stronger and a little stronger. and a little stronger, but I kept sweeping it under the rug because I hadn't done my work and I had all of these issues with self-worth and things like that that I hadn't looked at yet. And the nudges turned into, we'll call it like a hurricane, right? Where it was just, everything was just taken away. It was like, okay, you know what? We've warned you enough times. This is now going to end in a massive disaster that you are going to be in a severe amount of pain and have to do a ton of work to sort out the chaos after the fact. And I feel like this is that point that we're at, right? We know the scientists are screaming, hey, climate change, all of this stuff. Hey, we're living out of alignment. The elders, the indigenous communities, like all of the, we have many signs that are inundating us all of the time that we keep choosing to ignore because, oh, it's just a lot easier to ignore it and put my head in the sand and to order the stuff from Amazon. And I'm guilty of it too. I know exactly what you're talking about when you're like, oh, I just don't feel like picking the bugs off the garden. It's just so much easier to go to the grocery store. And I get that for sure. And it's such a huge change, right? Because we're not used to it. And so much of that knowledge has been lost, it really, in a very short period of time. I interviewed one of my grandmas for on the podcast a little while ago. And the way, just within her lifetime, in 83 years or so, the way that people lived compared to the way that we do now is just so vastly different, but it was such a short period of time. And to be in a more harmonious relationship with Earth is to really go back to the way that our grandparents were living, at least the ones that were living off the land. But it feels like we're starting from scratch because a lot of that knowledge was gone and we've lost our grandparents and all of these things. But it seems that, and there is a lot more interest. It feels like more and more people are like, oh, hey, yeah, I do want chickens. And even if we can just make smaller changes and in terms of having a small garden and learning to plant a seed and save some seeds, I think people are becoming more and more interested in that because that energy is there and they are seeing the signs. And we just have to continue to say yes to that. And some knowledge, you don't have to have all of it, but like just making small steps, I think, is important right now. And knowing that overall, even if something huge does happen, that our soul chose that, it's all predetermined. We're not doing anything wrong. And to just let it unfold. But if we are listening to our intuition and we are listening to those nudges, we're going to be led in the direction that we need to go anyway.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, like you, both sets of my grandparents had gardens. Mm-hmm. I remember there's the smells from childhood of going into the greenhouse. And I remember my grandfather pollinating tomato flowers in a greenhouse with a little paintbrush because there was no bees in the greenhouse, of course, and doing these kind of things. And my dad as well, from an early age, my dad had a garden, then an allotment, and growing a lot of our own vegetables and that kind of thing. And interestingly enough, there was something I was seeing on the internet the other day where somebody was saying about how, I don't know whether this is quite right, how people used to work more hours, and then other people saying that actually people work more hours now.
Mm-hmm.
I also saw this thing like growing your own garden is like printing your own money. It's, mm-hmm. I think the other thing to take into account is, of course, when you go to the store and you have the choice between organic or non-organic veg. Now, it's one thing to see it in the store, see a price premium on the organic veg, and you're looking at them and they don't look a lot different. Maybe the organic one is a little bit smaller and is a little bit lumpier or something like that. And you think, oh, that one kind of looks prettier. I'm going to go with the other one kind of thing. But when it comes to saying, ah, okay, I've got these bugs or this issue in my garden. Oh, I'll look it up on the internet. Okay, I need this chemical for them. And you go to the store and you read the back of the contents of the chemical or the indications that say what PPE you're going to use to apply that chemical. And you think, hang on, I'm going to eat that. It really brings it home. that I don't want that anywhere near my fruit and veggies. And yet I've been, let's say, inadvertently choosing that every time I go to the grocery store, rather than choosing something. I was spending some time in Pennsylvania recently and eating food which had been grown by the Amish or the Mennonites there, and knowing that just how good that food was, that it was grown in a much more natural way, and all of those kind of things. And as I said, sure, it might be not as big as the chemically grown stuff, or it might be a bit of a funny shape or something like that. That's the way it's supposed to be. Go grow your own, and you'll find that's what you get out of your garden. That's what you're supposed to be eating. And again, it's not until you actually go and do it yourself that sometimes you ask these questions of how to do it. And then you start getting into things like permaculture, you get into companion planting, you get into your rotational cycles within your vegetable patches and that kind of thing. And looking at the way that your ancestors did it, your parents did it, however it might be, and realizing, hey, look, all of this is there. And it's very much more important for us to, if we were to, let's say, when you look at, there's always the thing about the identification of corporate logos as opposed to the identification of leaves of plants. It's, we know all these logos. They've been fed into our minds, and they're taking up the storage space that should be taken up with the knowledge of how to sustain ourselves. And as you said, with regards to exactly whether it's a relationship, whether it's a job, whether it's a place or whatever it might be, I do feel that we get these little, you might say, warning bells that pop up and say, you know what? We might need to reassess this situation right now. We really need to reassess this situation right now. We really need to. And then it's okay, too late. Bang. And now we've got to deal with crisis management rather than a proactive learning and experiential way to mitigate the crisis later on, which is what we are being called to do by living more lightly with the land, by getting to understand the systems, the timings of ancient worlds, of ancient peoples, can help us to have a better roadmap of where we actually want to go, rather than like trying to work out how to put on the brakes when we're going down the hill towards a cliff kind of thing. And like, I realize that some of what I've talked about today, but it's not meant to be a negative thing. It's saying, look, these are the possibilities that may be in our not too distant future. What would you rather be? Would you rather have put in some time and energy into preparing yourself, into learning skills and tools that might help you? Because honestly, whether things happen in, let's say, a catastrophic way or not, it's a great thing to learn how to grow your own food. It's a great thing to learn how to make your own soap, how to do these things, which our great grandparents knew, which was part of their culture. And to be able to be more robust and therefore more comfortable when things happen that may push our like limits, as it were.
And learning those skills has nothing but positive consequences for your well-being. Tending a garden, being outside, growing things, communing with nature. All of those things are going to just improve your quality of life overall, right? We have become so diseased because of our lack of connection with nature. So moving in the other direction, even if it's something that one of those hard universal lessons that seems really cataclysmic and catastrophic at the time, we usually look at those things in hindsight and go, oh, okay, I see why this was actually for me.
Absolutely. And it's something when you go out and you reconnect with your garden on a daily basis and you watch the changes in leaves, in flowers, in patterns, in ants, in butterflies, in, you are truly connecting with the energy of your environment. And you recognize that you are an integral part of that environment, rather than I'm a human being, everything else around me is like the set or set dressing. No, this is an interactive experience that we are involving ourselves in. And when we've cut ourselves off from that interactive experience, of course, this can end up with mental, physical, emotional, and spiritual dis-ease, because it's like being locked up in a cage in some ways. And when we go out and we get our hands in the dirt and we're looking at starting to see the miracle of growing plants, the taste of how your strawberries, your carrots, your potatoes from your garden taste compared to the store-bought ones, it's just worlds apart. And then it's like you get on this, like this positive vortex of love, let's say, because you remember to fall in love with what you're doing. You remember to fall in love with your surroundings, because that's the emotion that is evoked when, like when I was a kid, we'd pull the carrots straight from the garden, brush the dirt off and crunch them straight away. And sometimes it was a bit gritty, like it wasn't always as clean as it could be, but that taste was amazing. It was unforgettable. And when we do that, we're like, okay, that's it. I'm taking the lawn up and I'm going to grow more veggies because I know how good this tastes. And now that I've understood how it's supposed to taste, I can't go back to that one that's got that. What's that kind of chemical aftertaste that's got in there?
Yeah, there's so, nothing better than a fresh garden carrot, especially one that you've grown yourself.
Absolutely. Or tomatoes straight off the vine and all of those kind of things. It is just something where, you know, although, as I said, like we look at it as saying, okay, there's a possibility of this, there's a possibility of that, which may be a driver. It then becomes a driver that you're reconnecting with your world in a way that sometimes we didn't even realize was possible. And when we start getting into that world, we're like, where have you been all my life? This is what we're here to do. And I think, as you said, you learn these new skills, or they may be new skills, or you advance skills that you've had for some time. You learn how to grow things properly and look after things properly. These are very good life skills to have.
They are, yeah. But now I need to figure out how to manage a garden and prep while also having this very nomadic energy that is in my chart. And I've been thinking about this because on one hand, I really want to have land, and there's this retreat that I want to build and having the apothecary and the whole thing. But then there's this other part of me that is just must be on the move. And it was funny. I was thinking about that actually just this week, and I just got back. It's currently September 12th when we're recording this, and my birthday was on the 9th. And my sister and I went way up north in BC, close to the Yukon border, and spent some time at these beautiful hot springs, Liard Hot Springs. And we were camping, and camping was something that I didn't love so much before. I love being outside, but I think in the past I tented it and that sort of thing, and just seems like a lot of work and not super comfortable. But we rented an RV that was cool. And it's had me thinking, and I'm like, maybe I should get myself one of these. I'm sick of living where I'm currently living right now. I don't want to have the traditional home and the whole thing. And now with things that have shifted so much for me recently in terms of losing an old business, I can be nomadic again. All you need is a Starlink, right, for the kind of work that I do. And so I'm really considering purchasing an RV and just going to different places and resting and exploring nature all over North America, potentially. But growing a garden when you're on the move all the time can also pose some challenges. I know even with the garden that I have back home, I've had really wonderful friends that have been watching it for me while I've been gone the past month, as this energy is coursing through my veins of needing to move all the time. But again, community, right? Building community, I think, is really important. And that's really how we are meant to live. And having everybody kind of pitch in and tend something together in smaller communities is something else that I think is going to be really important moving forward.
Absolutely. There's a couple of things that I could see with that. Firstly, with regards to an RV, converted horse box may be an interesting thing. And that just popped into my mind. But years ago, when I wanted to get back into gardening, this is probably going back about 20 years, what I wanted to do was something which was manageable for me. I was working about 60 hours a week at the time, and I couldn't. I'd got a quarter of an acre of land in the house that I was renting, but the idea of being up there, especially being as I'd got a hard physical job, the idea of digging over heavy clay soils after work was probably pretty much out of my way. And so I came across a system called square foot gardening.
I have a little square foot garden in my backyard. It's awesome.
There you go. You imagine one of them on the roof of your RV.
You could
or two of them,
something like that.
Yeah. And so there's a possibility. Look, there's your, like, some fresh fruit and veggies that you can keep tended and travel, and you put shader netting over them, like there's going to get the rain, all of that kind of thing. So there's a possibility there for movement using a vehicle kind of thing to, in order to do that. And the other thing, of course, that comes to mind is the idea of, like, permaculture eco villages, like where everybody belongs to a particular network. You host people in your, let's say, home base, whilst you travel to another eco village within the network, and you go there to tend their garden, they go to yours to tend your garden, and everybody's working together and creating this sustainable network. And then you can maybe tick a couple more boxes.
That's what it feels like to me is, I feel called to one particular area in Canada. I'd like to buy some land there and just start studying permaculture. I think I'm going to take a course this winter and just start, just get, break some land and just start. Yeah, really interesting. And I love the perspective that you're able to give me through that reading. I'd like to chat. We're already over time, but whatever, this is going to be a longer podcast. I love chatting with you. But I'd like to just talk about the structure of these charts and what people can expect if they decide to have a reading with you, which I highly recommend.
Okay. So what I do is I break down people's charts in two ways. The first way is what I call the static way, which is, it's like your, okay, we can use a whole bunch of different terms, like your life path energy reading is the way that I generally think about it. We could, I don't know whether it's the word soul contract is quite the words that I'm looking for, but basically it's the frequency that you carry when you come in, which is going to be the same frequency that you carry when you go out. It's something that you have been come here to do. Is something that you carry the skills and the talents to be able to do. And when we are aligning ourselves with the skills and talents that we're, you know, like naturally attuned to, then we find that our life is maybe a little bit easier. Because if we're trying hard to be a lawyer, yet we've got the energy of a gardener, we might find that law always seems rather difficult for us. And so we're always swimming against the current. And vice versa, there is those energies as well. And it helps us to understand where our natural talents lie. And when we're working with our natural talents, we feel more at ease because it's like this comes as second nature to us. Now, as I said, when I look through that, we will see various modifiers come into that. But that will give us this, like, overall blueprint of this is who you are. It's the skills and talents that you carry. And it's what you're here to do and what challenges that you're here to face. But then we look at something through the cross system. And the cross system can be seen over a period which could represent our childhood, a period that represents our adulthood, and a period which represents our eldership. And using the timing which we get from the timing that I mentioned earlier, the 52-year period, which can break those down into different parts of our lives, we can understand when we are having an overlay of a different energy that is going to modify our base frequency and develop it in a slightly different way. Now, once again, if we know that we are in a changing point between childhood and adulthood, somewhere between the age of 9 and 16, or adulthood and eldership, somewhere between the age of 35 and 42, we can prepare for that change to come along. Mm-hmm. We can say, okay, I've been doing this, I've been broadcasting this frequency for a while. In a couple of years, I'm going to be broadcasting that frequency. So I'm going to start changing my transmitters over. I'm going to start changing my equipment over so that I'm ready when that changeover happens, I'm already adapted to it. And so that I can take it with good grace and step into all the new opportunities that come up, rather than have to, once again, react to a situation that now occurs, which is going to, you know, require me to change my frequencies, change my transmitters all in one go, which is a little bit more challenging to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
And so we can also look at the artistic, feminine, intuitive side and the masculine working side to understand what we're bringing in through our artistic elements, what we're working with, what we're bringing out through our physical side as well. And so this gives us more nuanced details with regards to, let's say, what we could call our energetic signature.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, and I found it so fascinating at this point in my life. I just turned 39. And so we discussed energy that I think was going up to around the age of 52, I believe.
That's and right.
Yeah, and it was really cool because a lot of these new energies are happening right at this moment for me, right? There was a big shift that happened at the age of 36, 37, which I think was that kind of traveling nomadic energy that's coming in. But what I found really helpful was your explanation of this other energy that's coming in at around the age of 40 and a half, which is going to solidify a little bit more like purpose for me, I think, which I'm really looking forward to.
Yes.
And the way that you explained it gave me clues into what that might look like. And it allowed me to also see how the yearnings and some of the ideas and inspiration that I'm currently having right now, how that could potentially connect into this energy that if I'm able to align with, and I think we just end up getting aligned with it anyway, just to make that process a little bit more seamless. And some of that energy, because we talked about this energy of the, what was it? The warrior and the healer, and working with women of the younger generation. And I was like, that's interesting. That's not something that I had considered yet, and maybe something yet to come. But yeah, it's just now it's something that I can watch for and see how it unfolds. I think it's really fascinating.
Yes. Mm-hmm. As we transition between these ages and these states, I often describe it as being, okay, as being like a fluorescent lighting tube with a bad starter. It's like you hit the switch and you get flick. Okay, I get some detail about the room, flick. And you're getting more detail about the room. And as the switch stays on for longer, those flicks of light become more rapid or become more frequent. And this is like your future calling to you, as it were. It's like it's showing you. Just a little bit. You read a magazine article, and then you chat to a friend that was doing it, and then you take a class in it. And then all of a sudden, there comes that point in time, whether it's sort of 36 and a half or 40 and a half or somewhere around about there, where it's now the light is on fully. And you understood what all of those precognitions, those synchronicities were meaning leading up to it. It's the little breadcrumb trail that's saying, hey, this way I've got something to show you. and preparing yourself to move into that energy more fully. And so it's a question of picking up on these things and saying, oh, that's why I keep getting this urge that it comes and goes, but it keeps coming back, that I've got to go and do this. It's preparing me for this transition that's going to happen, when that's going to be, rather than on the odd occasion, something which is like the light's fully on now, and that's my mainstay. And for me, this happened in, actually, like, the mathematics of it was something that I worked out in about 2016 or something like that. But it actually happened on my 37th birthday, which I then found out when I'd done the mathematics, that was when my big changing point was. And that changing point was somewhat like yourself. I knew that I needed to move. I knew that I needed to do something. I was like resisting it, because keeping the status quo and keeping my life the way it was in the UK. And at 37, all the catalysts happened at the same time. I reached crisis point and I sat on the side of a mountain in Spain and decided, right, okay, this is time to let go of my life in the UK and really move somewhere else. It was like that point where there is no other path open. That's it. It's time's up. Like you said, you could have jumped earlier than this. You could have set sail earlier than this. But now there is no more time. And it's time that you're going to have to do it. And 6 weeks later, I was in Colorado. But that then brought me down through the US to Guatemala.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, it's so cool. And now that I think back and reflect on some of this timing, so for example, this tendency or this need to travel here for me started around, it said around the age of 36, 37. And this is around the time that I decided to launch this new product line and take on a whole bunch of debt from my business that just went under because of all of the debt and stuff that I had done. And if I had known about this energy prior, I might have done things a little bit differently. I don't know. I was still very inspired in things at the time, and maybe I needed to have those lessons. But I think the lesson in that, for anybody listening that might be going through something that seems very challenging, things might look on the surface that they're falling apart or that you're losing something. It may just be happening because you need to be aligned towards a higher purpose. And doing what I was doing, the way that I was doing it, was just not in alignment with what my soul's calling really is. And it was very obvious because there was just so much resistance and things fell apart in a way where it was just like, it was so undeniable. It was just like, okay, nope, this is not for you. You're not doing this anymore. Out the door. And don't fight it, right? If something like that is happening in your life right now, don't fight it. Just let it happen. And I can promise you're going to feel really good on the other side. I feel fucking fantastic now. It's great.
That's it. Yeah. I think that the way that I would put it is, heed the cosmic poke before you get the cosmic boot.
Totally.
And the timing thing, it's all clues. It's all breadcrumb trails. I've been working with the sacred calendar since 1998. And originally I was a research chemist. That's why I have my laboratory behind me right now.
Yeah.
And I look at things and I am very discerning when it comes to things either work or they don't work. Now, I don't always know how things work. I don't know all the ins and outs of how my motorbike gets me from one place to another. I don't know exactly how the engine works. I've got an idea about it and all that kind of thing. But in some ways, I don't need to know about it. What I need to know is that I can be in San Juan in 10 minutes' time if I get on my moto to do it. And the same with regards to the calendar. I'm always looking into the mathematics. It's something I'll do at a weekend as a kind of maths geek and that kind of thing, because I find it so fascinating. And in 25 years of work and study of that calendar, I am as much in love with it now as I was when I first started working with it. And I am amazed on a daily basis through the work that I do with people with regards to their feedback of, as I said before, how can you possibly know that? I'm like, it's written here. This is where it comes from.
No.
It is, I think it is one of the most amazing testaments and legacies of the people here and to their ancestors that they worked this out and that this can be used as such an amazing tool to help people get more aligned with their purpose here in this world. And I go back to that idea that the calendar is here to bring harmony to our people and harmony to our society. And that by understanding our true purpose within our world, within our life, then we're able to become harmonious with ourselves. And therefore, that's what we act as a beacon of harmony within our world. And the more beacons that we have, the more it lights up.
Yeah, absolutely. It starts with us, with yourself. Yeah, we don't have to worry about all the other problems in the world. We just have to worry about ourselves. Yeah.
Taking responsibility for ourselves, our own actions, and aligning ourselves with our highest purpose. It's pretty simple stuff, really. But the persuasiveness of the media is that we get lost. We forget about things. And sometimes we just need, whether it's a reading or whether it, or however it might be, to remind us about who we really are and remind us what our dreams really are as well.
Mm-hmm.
What our purpose really was, and whatever happened to that artist that you used to be, or that traveler that you used to be, or the one who was so inspired every time that they went and did this or did that? Because sometimes those are the bits of us that matter the most, and they get lost along the way. They're sometimes the bits that we let go of way too easily.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes we just need a little poke, a little reminder. That was some of the bits that really made our lives worthwhile.
Absolutely. Oh, that was such a beautiful conversation. I think we will leave it there, Mark. Thank you so much. If people want to connect with you and perhaps book a reading, how can they do that?
Firstly, thank you again, Krista, for having me on today. It's been an absolute pleasure chatting with you. And I've probably gone way off some of the topics that you either asked about or that I said we were going to chat about. But I hope that it's been useful to you. And yeah, if people want to get in touch, I have my website, which is thefourpillars.net. And they can go on there and find there's a drop down tab of where they can book a reading with me. So find that I publish on every day. I've been publishing for the last nearly 8 years now. The energy of the day, and that's on Instagram, on Mastodon. Sometimes it's on Threads when I remember and that kind of thing. But just to give a brief overview of what the energy of the day holds in store for all of us. And again, people could start following the calendar by having a look at that. And yeah. So website's usually the best way to find me and then go through the contact form there.
Perfect. We will have all the links in the show notes. Thank you again. I learn so much every time I chat with you. I super appreciate it. And for anybody listening, I hope you also learned a lot. And if any of this inspires you and you want to share it, please do. And we'll catch you all on the next episode. Thanks again, Mark.
Thanks, Krista.
Big love as always for being here today. I appreciate you so much supporting this project. Here's to truth, unity, the mystical, and the magical. If you want to connect more, hit me up on the gram at magic, M-A-G-I-C-K dot maven. I'm a lover and maker of herbal potions, beautiful environments, brands, adventures, and wild crafts. So if that's something that lights you up, I am always up to some wacky adventure and would love to connect with you there. If you feel called to share this episode, please do. This is a passion project. I'm not doing any sponsorship at this time, so it would mean the world. Thanks again, and see you on the next episode.